Well, hello everyone. And in this video, it's going to be another kind of little mini lecture today. In fact, I'm going to do two things. First, I'm going to read an essay, a little mini essay that I wrote recently on my Substack about Fabianism, the Fabian Society, and why it is basically that the Fabians are completely cool with the Conservatives or the Tories, or now Reform UK. And I'm going to look at the kind of symbiotic relationship between Fabianism and Conservatism, because as I was reading through some of the Fabian stuff, it occurred to me that the doctrine is quite literally the same. It's exactly the same as Conservatism in the Burkean tradition. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to read this essay, and then I'm going to share some other things that occurred to me reading this book by R. Palm Dutt called Britain's Crisis of Empire. I was pretty pleased with this. It's in very good nick for a book from 1942. I think it was from 1950, but it's in very good condition, this one. And Dutt was a hardcore Marxist Leninist. Actually, he was one of the few who stayed loyal to Stalin, even though he was British after Stalin died. And one of the really interesting things about reading obscure books like this is that you start to see things that wouldn't have been visible otherwise. Obviously, he's coming from a very different perspective from me as a hardcore Marxist, but there's a section in this book where he starts talking about the Fabians and starts talking about specifically the Fabian method of managing the empire. There's something called the Fabian Colonial Society, I think it was, or the Fabian what do they call it? The Fabian Colonial Essays, there we go, and how the Fabians justified managing the British Empire back when that was a thing. And some really interesting kind of little insights came through reading that. So before we get going here, this is going to be an interesting one, I think. But before we get going, I'll remind everybody, pick up a course at the Academic Agency. Trivium, the bestseller there. I will play the ad when we come back. First of all, I'm going to read my essay. Then we're going to have a look at Dutt, and then I'll go through the ways in which basically conservatism and Fabianism end up in exactly the same place using slightly different ideological justification. You know, they say a system is what it does. A system is what it does. But if a system is what it does, Fabianism and conservatism are basically the same thing viewed from enough distance. All right, let's have a look at this ad and I'll see you in a minute.
Academic Agency.
All right, so I'm going to share my screen here so that you can see where I'm reading from. This is my own Substack, The Forbidden Text. And I'll just read you this essay, Why Do Abject Westminster Bubble Tory Boys Support the Fabian Society? Now, this is going to take about 8-10 minutes to read this out. Then, as I mentioned, we're going to have a look at this book, and then I'll take you through my broader conclusions here, because I think this is quite important to grasp, and it's counterintuitive, because, you know, ostensibly conservatives are coming from the right, Fabians are coming from the left, but actually, if you actually look at what the outcomes are and what they're arguing, they're the same thing. I can't believe it's taken me all this time to figure out it's literally just the same thing. Anyway, let me read this. Recently, the abject Westminster bubble Tory boy outlet, Pimlico Journal, launched a surprising defense of the Fabian Society, which doubled as a scathing attack on the Lotus Eaters, who stand accused of peasant conspiratorialism. Much of their anger, of course, comes from the fact that Carl Benjamin and his team are supporting Restore Britain, like any good patriot should, and you should too, and not the disgusting regime containment operation known as Reform UK. If you're not familiar with Pimlico, it's a minor league think tank adjacent space for would-be Tory or now Reform spads to practice their empty wonk speak until they get jobs serving some risible MP for 42 grand a year. In this article, I seek to answer one question. Why does the modern aspiring M25 Tory boy support the Fabians? For the answer, I turned to a volume called New Fabian Essays, 1952. I don't have that book on me here. Written at a time when Labour was in a downbeat mood after Winston Churchill had defeated Clement Attlee in the general election of 1951. And here you can see a picture of a typical Tory boy. This specific Tory boy did not write the article defending the Fabian Society, but I can guarantee you the guy who did looks exactly like that. He looks exactly like that. Now, the book starts with the admission that the reactionary pessimist Arnold Toynbee had been right about progress and that Fabians, the liberals and the Marxists had all been wrong. You can read about Toynbee in my chapter of him in The Prophets of Doom. That's a book by me. Buy it now. Buy it now. Buy it now. Everybody talks about populist delusion. My more recent book, Applied Elite Theory, I've got Foundations of Shakespeare coming out very soon. But Prophets of Doom, I think, is a little bit underrated because it's all about cyclical history and thinking civilization. You should buy that book and read it if you haven't read it. And there's a whole chapter on Toynbee in there. Anyway, in the pre-war period, one of the leading Fabians, a hero of the Pimlico Journal, was H.G. Wells. However, the course of history left Wells feeling that he had been wrong and Toynbee right. And this is now a quotation from New Fabian Essays. Towards the end of his life, Wells began to despair because he realized the failure of his implicit principle that the enlargement of scientific knowledge, that is, power, to control nature and men, necessarily increases freedom. Faced by the obvious failure of rationalism to rationalize human nature, he moved very near to the pessimistic position of Arnold Toynbee. Next comes a startling admission. The author, that is R.H.S. Crossman, who's an early 50s Fabian, agrees that Toynbee was right. He says, most of us would now agree that Toynbee's sense of direction was better than that of the early Wells. Well, who'd have thunk it? So-called reactionary, a so-called rightist, Toynbee, correct, the progressives all wrong. Again. But anyway, let's continue. Yet until the 1930s, Wells' illusions were shared by liberals, Marxists, and early Fabians. They were indeed the climate of all progressive public opinion. The materialist conception of progress was based on assumptions about human behavior, which psychological research has shown to have no basis in reality, and on a theory of democratic politics, which has been confuted by the fact of the last 30 years. There is neither a natural identity of interest nor an inherent contradiction in the economic system. the growth of science and popular education does not automatically produce an upward evolution in society, if by upward is meant from servile to democratic forms, and the apocalyptic assumption that, after a period of dictatorship, a proletariat revolution must achieve a free and equal society is equally invalid. The evolutionary and the revolutionary philosophies of progress have both proved false. Judging by the facts, there is far more to be said for the Christian doctrine of original sin than for Rousseau's fantasy of the noble savage or Marx's vision of the classless society. Our first task, therefore, is to redefine progress. Now, this is a typically Fabian and also a Blairite, it must be said, move. Concede the point, then redefine the frame. Much of the rest of the book tries to solve the puzzle of how to move towards the socialist end goal while accepting these basic truths. Now, it is worth mentioning that the cartoon caricature of the Fabian or the Fabian society, as peddled by those pesky peasants so sneered at by Pimlico, is that of the sneaky operator who engages in the strategy of boiling the frog slowly, so that the masses are sleepwalked into socialism as opposed to jolted by revolution. The thing about that cartoon caricature is that it happens to be true. Let's hear it from the horse's mouth. So here's this same Fabian Crossland who says, direct quote, "The temper of the people will be more contented and therefore more conservative, and public opinion will take time to acclimatize itself to the prospect of each further radical advance." The Fabian understands that the revolution ain't happening. And more to the point, they don't want it to happen because it brings too much upheaval. Fortunately for them, if you're a Fabian, you're in luck, because they have been gifted the most cowardly, snivelling, spineless, and downright traitorous opposition God might have ever granted them, namely the Tories. Unsurprisingly, therefore, throughout the book, that book being New Fabian Essays, the Tories are not an enemy to smite, as one might expect from Labour intellectuals. Lots of these people were Labour MPs even, but rather a built-in feature of their plans. Here is the same author, just quoted, counting on Tory cowardice for the advancement of the Fabian vision. Direct quote. "For these reasons, each Tory government will certainly beat a retreat, in particular towards greater inequality, from the position reached under the previous Labour administration. But the retreat will be half-hearted. The pressures making for statism are far too strong to be held back, and the Tories too intuitive a party indefinitely to play Canute. The right-wing sabotage of Labour's programme, which every left book club member expected before the war, in fact, never materialised. For precisely the same reason, the Conservatives now cannot and will not restore completely the pre-war status quo. However, these partial retreats will provide plenty of material for Labour speeches and election programmes. So also, indeed, quite apart from Tory retreats, will reforms demanding to be accomplished within the broad framework of statism." Of course, the stupid peasants, so lamented by Pimlico, know all of this because it's summed up in the old internet meme of the ratchet effect. Now, I don't need to click on that link. You've all seen the ratchet effect. You know, if you're American, you've seen it. You know, the Democrats bring something in, the Republicans lock it in, then the ratchet clicks once more. In this country, it's not even a ratchet anymore. You know, Labour brings something in, Tories lock it in, and the Tories now are fucking accelerationists. They turn the wheel even more. Tories aren't even Labour driving at the speed limit anymore. They put the foot on the gas. Anyway, What's more interesting to me, however, than this ratchet effect is another passage in the book by the deeply subversive Roy Jenkins, an arch villain responsible more than most for wrecking this country. If you don't know about Roy Jenkins, you'd look him up. But apparently a hero to Pimlico. This is Roy Jenkins now. The party system, which is and has been so much the essence of British political democracy that it is difficult to believe that it is not a sine qua non, may also be thought to be endangered by a substantial move towards egalitarianism. Must not the one-class state also be a one-party state? Certainly the rigid Marxist, to whom this development would not in any event appear a dreadful calamity, would have to answer the question with a clear affirmative. And even those who are a good deal less rigid, but who nonetheless believe in the dominance of the economic motive as a spring to political action, could only escape from such an answer by postulating a new party grouping arising out of the conflicts between those in one productive or geographical group and those in another. Not a very likely development in a country so closely integrated and so impregnated by a common tradition as the United Kingdom. A more realistic answer is that the move towards and even the attainment of a classless society might well leave largely undisturbed the present party basis. Certainly the immensely resilient Conservative Party, which has survived so skillfully the social changes of the past 150 years, would not collapse under the disappearance of the bourgeoisie. There is always room in British politics for a party of consolidation, and provided there are leaders prepared to play the role of a Sir Robert Peel or a Mr. R.A. Butler, and ensure that it is merely no advance and not positive reaction which is attempted, the future of conservatism is assured. Its basis of support is not only or even principally those who feel their economic class interests would be engendered by the reformers. It comes from the much more numerous class of those who, without particular regard for their own economic interests, shrink from the intellectual adventure of supporting a government of advance. They are the sceptics, the pessimists about man's ability to improve his own lot, who reject not so much this or that aspect of the Reforming Party's programme as the whole concept that changes wrought by government can make a better society. They will always exist, and in great numbers. In a classless society, as much as in a hierarchical one, and they will always offer a solid basis of support for a party of the right. Now, what is important here is that Jenkins, in his vision of the classless socialist state, factors in and then bakes in the Tories. He rejects a one-party state and instead just rolls with the notion that this feckless band of losers, the Tories, will always be there. And they make a convenient whipping boy, and in any case, as per Crossland earlier, will serve to lock in Fabian wins. Cast your mind back to my original Zero Seats essay. Recall the comments of Tony Blair, who, in 1997, was anxious that he would destroy the Tory party. He did not actually want the Tories gone because they were useful to him. Many similar comments have since been made by Labour grandees when it looked like the Conservative Party would become ex-parrots. In other words, to the Fabian mind, the Tories are not just a minor inconvenience to smooth the path of progress, they are structurally necessary. I'll repeat that again. The Tories, for the Fabians, are structurally necessary. Now, of course, the system hopes to reform T1000 in Reform UK, who, as long as they are basically Tories, can fulfil the same structural function as the old rotten party did for 200 years. Let us return now to the original question. Why would the Tory boy today defend the Fabians? It is because, in a strange way, The Fabians are the only people who truly love the Tories and think they deserve to exist. The relationship is best embodied as that between Tony Blair and his gimp, William Hague. Blair must regard Hague as a pathetic creature, pitiable almost, since he has become such a faithful Blairite dog. Rolling on his back for the master to stroke his belly. And yet also, for Blair, it is more useful to have a weak cretin like Hague occupying the space that says right wing or Tory than have genuine opposition. Hague knows this, and that is why he loves Tony Blair. I posit that at the much lower Pimlico wannabe spad level of Tory boy, the logic works in the same way. At some depth of their cuckolded, unloved, not bullied enough at school psyche, they understand that the Fabians love them as the hated peasants never could. And that's the end of that article. So now let's move on to Dutt. Now, I'm not going to read too much from this book. I just want to kind of sum up his basic conclusion here, because what he does is he looks at statements from Tory people around this time who were making the arguments of empire. And then he looks at the Fabian ones. And he says, basically, the Fabian policy, the Labour policy on the empire and what to do with it was literally identical to the Tory one, just given a slightly different justification. So where the Tories would give, you know, conservative flavored, or they'd appeal to tradition or something like that, the all the Fabians did was basically swap out the word tradition or swap out the right-wing words and just call it progressive. They wanted to give imperialism a progressive and socialist appearance. But in the final analysis, according to Dutt, the power structure was exactly the same. The justifications were exactly the same. The civilizing mission was exactly the same. They just changed some of the words and dressed it up in progressive language. And that got me thinking. That really got me thinking. That made me think, well, maybe Fabian or Fabianism is just the way the British government, and this becomes really clear when you read a Marxist like this, a proper Marxist like this, because they see through all the bullshit. They're like, well, look, this stuff you're saying, it's just words. What have you actually done? What's the actual difference in the, you know, at the level of the base, at the level of structure? Absolutely none. Fabianism is simply how the British government justifies itself to the left. That's it. It is literally what the British government does, and then how it justifies its actions to the left, whatever it is, whether it's imperialism or bombing Iraq or you know, cutting welfare or expanding welfare. It doesn't matter what the thing is. Okay, it's a bit of paint, basically. It's a BS, 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 therefore I rule. It's a bit of paint. It's a post hoc justification of what the British government does, okay? Sold to the left. That's basically Fabianism in a nutshell. So what's conservatism? It's exactly the same thing, only how the British government sells itself to the quote-unquote right. That's it. There is no other difference. And to hammer this home, I actually came up with the actual outcomes. And I'm going to talk through these now, okay? So the first thing is that Fabianism and conservatism are both doctrines of incremental anti-revolutionary gradualism, okay? If you read cuckolded Edmund Burke, okay, and the Imperium Press actually have promised to release a book one-shotting Burke, I can't wait to read that, because I've come to genuinely despise conservatism, I have to be honest. But, you know, if you look at Fabian's, it's incremental anti-revolutionary gradualism. They basically agree with the conservatives on all of that. They are, it's the same. You say, well, conservatism is progressivism driving at the speed limit. But Fabianism is also progressivism driving at the speed limit. And they strategically use the Tories to slow things down, to boil the frog. It's the same thing. That's why there's such continuity between the Labour and Tory. Even at this time when Labour were Clement Attlee and Tory were Winston Churchill, you'd think they were polar opposite. They were exactly the bloody same. Number two, the symbiotic ratchet effect in governance. What was really fascinating is that when I was looking for the ratchet effect meme, because I'm used to seeing it from the right. I'm used to seeing it as, well, it's, you know, it's the Republicans that lock in Democrat wins forever, or it's the, you know, it's the Tories who do that for Labour. Amazingly, the left have their own version of this, where the two parties are switched over. The ratchet is going the other way, that, you know, the Democrats lock in Republican wins, that the Democrats are actually the ratchet facilitator, and the Republicans are the ones moving things to the right. Now, obviously, I'm not sure if I agree with that, but it's just really fascinating to me that from the other point of view, the ratchet effect works in the other way. Shows you that it's just the same thing being viewed from two slightly different angles. Third thing, pragmatic statism and managerial technocracy. Pragmatic statism and managerial technocracy. They both basically end up justifying the same set of tools, the permanent deep state, civil service, you know, whatever it is, whatever the status quo is, they both end up bending over backwards to justify it. Almost like they're the mouthpieces for the permanent managerial technocracy. Four, we get the preservation of establishment power. So again, if you view it through a revolutionary lens, or if you view it from the point of view of actually wanting anything to change, both the Fabians and the Conservatives will be in your way. They both basically end up providing a set of justifications for things as they are now. If you're a communist and you want, you know, an end to the capitalism or whatever, right, you're going to come up against Fabian standing in your way. This is why the left wingers fucking hate Tony Blair, because he's always in their way. I think reading Fabianism, I think Blair was basically a Fabian. I think Blair is now still basically Fabian in his outlook. Okay, and then because one of the interesting things about Fabianism, if you read them, is they're not coming from a Marxist place. They have their own intellectual tradition that goes through people like Jeremy Bentham, and there's a kind of Christian influence in there as well. They're not kind of worshipping at the altar of Marx. They've got their own separate socialist tradition. And they've always, you know, if you think within the Labour Party, there's been a struggle between the Marxist tendency and the Fabian tendency. And the Fabians, like, don't really like the Marxists. They've got their own way of seeing things. And as you saw, they actually fundamentally disagree at some level with the priors of Marx, okay? They don't have a materialist they dropped the materialist outlook. Certainly in 52 they did. So, yeah, that's very interesting. But then if you want revolutionary change, let's say, from the right, or if you want radical change, or if you want any sort of change at all, you come up against the conservative, the Tory boy, okay? And now they're being truly threatened by someone like Rupert Lowe, you're getting Tory boy defences of the Fabians. Just as when it looked like the Tory party were going to be destroyed, and hopefully they still will be, you get Labour defences of the Tory party. You get left-wing defence. I actually saw a piece in the New Statesman saying it would be a disaster if the Tories were destroyed. Interesting, eh? Mm. And then finally, you get the justification of the same elite-managed state. The same elite-managed state. Because in the end, what does it all even boil down to? One big club, you ain't in it, peasant. It's one big club, and you ain't in it. If you dare say something about it, you're a stupid peasant. Isn't that right, Pimlico editor Nigel Forrester? Anyway, hopefully this was interesting. Let me know if you agree or disagree. You see, I always think it's one of the things I really have come to dislike, as per my video to Stelios back in the day, was, you know, treating political ideas as a kind of intellectual exercise in philosophy rather than as something lived and judged on by its deeds, as something that kind of exists always in the real world and something that is a post hoc justification, which should be judged on the actual outcome. Remember, a system is what it does, okay? One of the things that I've tried to do again and again is be like, look, you have to look beyond the flim-flam of what they say, okay? Roy Jenkins could be sitting there saying that, oh, well, ultimately the end goal is a classless socialist state, okay? And some, you know, Jacob Rees-Mogg type character could be sitting there quoting Edmund Burke and talking about the living tradition and all of the, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's all wank. It's all wank. That's what it really is. That's what it really is. The argument to just about how to arrange the deck chairs. It's flim-flam. It's nonsense. It's sixth-form debate club crap. Arguing about the 1% difference. It's not real. And you only see that it's not real when you go outside of it. And that's why I find reading people like Dutt, you know, who are just completely outside the frame, because they see it for what it is. And I want you to see it for what it is, because at this moment, it's critical that you see it for what it is. Because Reform UK is trying to put the band back together. We dealt the band a blow with zero seats and almost destroying the Tory party. System is reeling. Now, they were trying to put the band back together. Then Rupert Lowe put a spanner in the works, and how they have freaked out and how they have revealed themselves. And look at the attacks coming, and look at the hit pieces coming, and look who has freaked out about it. Now, subversive outlet, the Pimlico Journal, are reduced to simply screeching stupid peasant at the likes of me. You've got to see through what these people are. I'll hold that there so you can take a screen grab of it. Fabianism and conservatism are the same thing. Pick up a course, Trivium, and I'll see you next time. If you liked this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.